Then we'll start this session with a meditation, and we're going to start with the shamatha meditation that we've been doing this morning, and that is simply awareness of awareness, resting in awareness. But we'll do just the first half of the meditation will be a shamatha practice, and then halfway through or so we'll actually move into vipassana practice. So then we'll introduce some instructions to investigate the nature of the mind, and these instructions are based on the oral Mahamudra tradition, which we're going to now start to look at in the text after the meditation. So let's do that first. Okay, so let's do the meditation. As an act of loving kindness for yourself, let go of any external distractions and simply allow your awareness to descend into the body. Becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. And using the out-breath to relax and release any tightness or tension in any part of the body. Allowing the embodied to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. And relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. Letting go of any hopes or fears, worries or concerns about the past or the future. In particular, letting go of any expectations for this meditation. Letting go of all of these things. and simply allowing the mind to rest in the present moment. Focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. And allowing the eyes to be at least partially open. Vacantly resting your gaze in the space in front of you. Releasing all appearances. And simply resting in the experience of awareness itself. Not trying to do anything at all. Simply resting in awareness. Help balance the mind. We can do the oscillation of relaxing and concentrating. So first, releasing awareness completely. Releasing all appearances. Completely relaxing. No effort. And then arousing and refreshing and sharpening the focus. Being aware. Alert. Again, relaxing and releasing awareness. And again, sharpening, concentrating, being aware, alert. And then simply rest. Resting in luminously clear awareness. Completely relaxed and alert. Does awareness have a location? Is it located somewhere? Is it inside the body? Is it somewhere inside the head? Is awareness located outside the body? Is awareness coming from somewhere? Is awareness abiding somewhere? Is awareness going somewhere? Does awareness have a particular color? Does awareness have a particular shape? Does awareness have a particular size? Switch on the lights, thanks. Any questions about that practice? So that's sort of a more common approach to coming to realize the nature of the mind through the oral Mahamudra tradition. So you're going to see now in that first section of the presentation, we're going to see some instructions fairly similar to what we just did in that meditation, coming from the oral Mahamudra tradition. I mean, it depends again how you use the word, but when we say resting in awareness, we're resting in the mind. Now, what we need to realize is that sometimes that word awareness in the different Tibetan traditions is used to have a slightly different meaning. Often in the Kagyu and the Nyingma school, and the Tibetan word for awareness is Rigpa. In the Dzogchen tradition, when they use the word Rigpa, which is the translated as awareness most often, they are only referring to the very subtle mind, the very subtle level of mind that we gain access to at the tantra level of practice. Whereas any other level above that is they use the word mind. So there, mind and awareness are mutually exclusive. If it's the mind, it's not awareness. If it's awareness, it's not the mind. Because they're talking about different levels. So we need to be aware of that. We need to understand that often that's the case. That's how they use the word, particularly in Dzogchen tradition. Also, awareness can be used as a verb, as a function, the function of the mind. We saw in the Shamatha section that the clear and knowing nature of the mind. In Tibetan, the knowing there is also Rigpa, the same word in Tibetan. But here, it just means the function of the mind. The mind is aware. It knows. It's knowing. So there, when we use the word like awareness of awareness means to be aware of awareness. So the first awareness is a verb. To be aware of the mind. So that's another way we see the word awareness. And sometimes, you know, in the Shamatha we talked about the two tools of mindfulness, holding the object, and then monitoring that. And we used in English the word introspection, to monitor. Sometimes translators translate that word as awareness. So sometimes when you see awareness, the translator means introspection. So again, you know, we have to understand this. And so whenever we see the word awareness in a text, we have to try to understand, well, how is that person using this word here? Otherwise, if we assume that it always means the same thing, we're going to have a lot of confusion. So here, when we talk about awareness of awareness, the first word awareness means to be aware of, to know. Awareness is synonymous there with mind. Yes. Okay, let's go into the text now. So now we're in the Vipassana part of the text, and the presentation is divided into two. The first is a general presentation of the different ways to introduce the ultimate nature of the mind. So these are some instructions, Vipassana instructions, coming from the various oral Mahamudra traditions, particularly within the Kagyu school. So to start, it says, as said by the teacher, and here teacher is another epitaph for Buddha, so he's quoting the Buddha, Buddha Shakyamuni. When one realizes the mind, there is enlightenment. Do not seek enlightenment elsewhere. And then also quoting from Saraha, the great 8th century Indian master, who says, the mind alone is the seed of all. It is that which elaborates nirvana and samsara. I prostrate to the mind that is like a wish-fulfilling jewel. It is that which bestows every desired result. So then the Panchen Lama, based on those two quotes, is making his own comments on this. He says, in this way, there is the great plight of samsara and the great reward of nirvana through respectively not realizing and realizing the ultimate reality of one's own mind as it is. Meaning, he's saying, if we don't realize the nature of our mind, we're stuck in samsara, and if we do realize the nature of our own mind, we can transcend samsara and achieve nirvana, enlightenment. All the sacred sutras and tantras are in complete agreement on this point. So Panchen Lama is basically saying, we need to realize the nature of the mind, because if we don't, we're stuck in samsara. If we do, we can achieve nirvana, we can achieve enlightenment. So now he's going to quote or refer to a number of different oral traditions within the Mahamudra system, within the various Kagyu schools mainly. And he says, ways to meditate by cutting through a basis or root to mind. Now, of course, we grasp onto the mind as something real, something independent, having its own existence from its own side. So that would be holding on to a basis or root of mind. So we need to cut through that. So how to do that? So first he's talking about one particular tradition within the Mahamudra system that says, within a state of meditative equipoise, so remember, meditative equipoise is balanced mind. So again, within the state of shamatha, having a calm, clear, focused mind as a basis, then we investigate. One investigate whether one's own mind is established as being inside or outside, so we did that in this meditation, or as something that arises, abides and ceases. We also did that. Is it coming from somewhere? Is it remaining somewhere? Is it going somewhere? When one sees that it is not established in any of these ways, then one has cut through a basis or root of mind, one has been introduced to the nature of the mind, and one has attained the meaning of Mahamudra. And then, relating to that, he's quoting a doha, one of these songs of realization. And he says, in the doha, it says, when the mind and all appearances are sought, they are not found. Even a searcher does not exist. Since that absence neither arises nor ceases in the three times, and the three times, of course, is past, present, future, that very thing that never changes is the nature. So he's talking here in the doha, of course, about emptiness. It is the mode of abiding of great bliss. Thus all appearances are dharmakaya. So here in this oral Mahamudra and also the tradition, the Dzogchen tradition, when they talk about using the word awareness and so forth, they talk about the very subtle mind. And that very subtle mind, when we achieve enlightenment, becomes the enlightened mind. And the enlightened mind is the Dharmakaya. So that's what he's saying here, is that thus all appearances are dharmakaya, means there's not a separate mind and then separate appearances. The appearances are an expression coming from dharmakaya, from the mind. So that's the first quote. So that's the first tradition he's quoting. And for each of these, also, His Holiness Dalai Lama, in his Gelug Kagyu tradition of Mahamudra, is also, of course, comments on this himself. So I'll read out what Dalai Lama says about this. So if you have the book, it's on page 301. And I think all of you have got the PDF file from Mick. And in the PDF file, it's on page 108. The Gelug Kagyu tradition of Mahamudra. I think someone's got it here. No? Okay. It's a big, fat, red one. But Mick sent you the PDF file of that book. Okay, so in the PDF file, it's on a page 188. So he says, His Holiness Dalai Lama says, for the first one here, he says, the first of the five traditions is, within a state of absorbed concentration to scrutinize the mind to determine if it is established as external or internal, or as something that arises, abides, or ceases. When one sees that it cannot be established as any of these, one has cut down to the foundational state of mind. One has recognized mind, one has reached the meaning of Mahamudra. The backing support for this is a Doha. And he's quoting the Doha as we have in the text here. When you search for any mind or appearance, you cannot find one. There is an absence of even anyone searching. This absence that neither arises nor ceases in any of the three times and which never alters is the abiding nature of natural, greatly blissful awareness. In this way, all appearance making and appearances are Dharmakaya, a body encompassing everything. So I'll just keep going. If you have any questions on anything as we go, then raise your hand. Otherwise, I'll just keep going. In His Holiness?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So he's quoting the Doha again. It says, when you search for any mind or appearance, you cannot find one. There is an absence of even anyone searching. This absence that neither arises nor ceases in any of the three times, which means past, present, future, and which never alters, is the abiding nature of natural, greatly blissful awareness. Remember that greatly blissful awareness is this very subtle mind. We saw that in the Tantra Mahamudra. The Tantra Mahamudra is the luminosity that was the exalted wisdom of great bliss. So he's talking about that here. In this way, all appearance making and appearances are Dharmakaya, a body encompassing everything. Yeah, we're going to talk more about this. This is going to come up. I'm going to talk about this in detail tomorrow afternoon, because here this is an aspect of an enlightened being. And kaya, very difficult to translate into English. Often it's translated as body. Well, when we see that word body, we sort of think this, that this has got nothing to do with this. And Dharma, we saw earlier, has many meanings. And here, Dharmakaya often is translated as truth. So often this is translated as the truth body, or sometimes wisdom truth body. And this is one aspect of the enlightened being, and this is the enlightened mind. So, therefore, what he's saying is that all appearances are nothing other than Dharmakaya, meaning there is no independent appearances separate from the mind. So that's what he's saying. And you'll find that a lot in the Mahamudra traditions, things like all appearances are Dharmakaya. And that's where we're talking about this. We saw in the Tantra section this word co-emergent. Co-emergent, meaning two things always emerging together. And in the Kagyu tradition, and we can talk about those two things in a number of ways, and often in the Kagyu tradition, when they use the word co-emergent, they mean mind and appearances always emerge together. You don't have mind here and appearances here. So that's why we see all appearances are Dharmakaya, because they're always together. You can't have a mind without an appearance separately, independently.
This is, you know, all these
We're going to talk about all the kayas, and I'm going to list them all and talk about them in detail tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
And in that context, if you have something related to that you want to ask, then ask, and I'll make it clear.
Yeah.
Tomorrow afternoon.
If you can get the dhammatai, the rikha, blah, 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 those things into it, that would be super.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do that. So, second tradition. Another tradition states that one searches for the mind within the parts of one's own body, from the crown of the head to the soles of the feet. When one sees that it is not established as being any of those parts, that it is not established in any way as something physical, having a shape, colour, and so forth, then one sees the nature of mind. So we had also those instructions, you know, does it have a colour, does it have a shape? Is it in the body somewhere? And then he's quoting Shang Rinpoche, which I think was a great Tibetan master in the Kagyu tradition, and he said, "The nature of one's own mind is a seed of all. It is from the very beginning not different from the minds of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. It appears as the Dharmakaya. It is not matter," meaning not physical, "and it is clear by nature, not established as a functioning thing. It has no colour or size." So we saw those instructions in our meditation. So here is Holiness' book. It says, the second tradition is, when one searches for mind, to look for it within the body, from the crown of one's head to the tip of one's toes. It cannot be established as any part of the body. In other words, when we search for an actual basis with the defining characteristics, making it our mind, we cannot find any part of our body from the top of our head to the tips of our toes that satisfies that. Thus, mind cannot be established as any of these. Mind having a nature of mere clarity and awareness, a nature of being something that cognizes, is something distinct from body. Thus, no part of body can be given the name mind, since none of them is a basis for having the defining characteristics that would make it a mind. Okay, third tradition. Yet another tradition states that, without dwelling in the past or anticipating the future, rest serenely in a state of present awareness, fresh and uncontrived. In this way, the nature of the mind will be nakedly and directly seen. At that time, one has cut through a basis or root to the mind and has been introduced to the nature of the mind. Those instructions look very familiar, don't they? I think they came up right at the beginning of the shamatha section of our text. And remember, Panchen Lama, at the end of that shamatha section, said, well, most meditators of his time said these sorts of instructions were to present the Buddha in the palm of your hand. And we see that, and that's exactly what this tradition is saying. Whereas Panchen Lama said, well, okay, but these instructions, if you follow them, will definitely help you to develop shamatha. Whether or not you realize the nature of mind, maybe not sure. So we see again here, those shamatha instructions that we have are actually classified as vipassana instructions in the oral tradition often, as we see here. And again, he's quoting Saraha, who says, rest in a fresh, uncontrived and relaxed manner. And as said by Mahasiddha Lingrepa Padma Dorje, so again, I think this is a great Tibetan master in the Mahamudra tradition, when resting in an uncontrived and fresh manner, realization dawns. When sustaining this like the flow of a river, it will dawn even more fully. You, the yogi, thoroughly abandon all signs of fixation and be constantly in equipoise. So His Holiness says for the third one, the third tradition is, without following the track of thoughts of the past or scouting ahead to meet thoughts of the future, simply rest in the present moment of resplendent, here and now, non-contriving mind. This bare, straightforward seeing of the nature, this is bare, straightforward seeing of the nature of the mind. With it, one has cut down to the foundational state of mind. One has recognized mind itself. The backing support for this is a quotation from Saraha. Settle in a fluid and flowing manner in the here and now non-contriving state. And one from Drukchen Lingrepa. Settle in the here and now non-contriving state and mind gives rise to understanding and realization. Cultivate this like a flowing stream and mind gives rise to its full expansion. Yogis, always absorb your concentration fully into the state rid of all defining characteristics at which to focus. So that's the third tradition. So another flavor of that, the fourth one down the bottom, it says, others state that no matter what type of objects that dawn in the mind, such as visual forms or sounds, and also no matter what type of thoughts that dawn in the mind, such as virtuous or non-virtuous, neither suppress nor pursue them even slightly. By looking nakedly at their nature, they will vanish. Again, exactly the instructions we had in the Shamatha section. By looking nakedly at their nature, they will vanish and then rest in the vivid, pristine emptiness that cannot be in any way identified. Such seeing is a realization of ultimate reality, and one has been introduced to the nature of the mind. So again, these very instructions we saw in the Shamatha section of our text. And then he's quoting here Maitripa. So remember, Maitripa was a great Indian master, contemporary of Naropa, who also was instrumental in bringing Mahamudra instructions into Tibet. And he says, if you desire to realize the meaning beyond concepts with nothing to be done, cut through a basis or root to your own mind and rest nakedly in awareness. Allow the water stained by conceptions to become clear and rest naturally without suppressing or pursuing appearances. Without abandoning and without grasping is Mahamudra. So again, very similar to our Shamatha instructions, in fact. So here in His Holiness's the book, we have the following. The fourth tradition is, no matter what appearances of objects, such as sights or sounds, to which the mind gives rise, and no matter what thoughts of good or bad, constructive or destructive, to which mind also gives rise, neither to negate nor affirm any of them, even to the slightest degree. If one looks starkly at their nature, they automatically disappear. To see and meld with the resplendent absence that comes after this and before straightforwardly seeing anything else is to understand and realize the nature of reality. It is to recognize mind. The backing support for this is a quotation from Maitripa. If you wish to realize the meaning that is beyond intellect with nothing to be done, root out your limited awareness and settle starkly into pure awareness. Plunge into the waters of this pristine lucidity, unsullied by any stain of conceptual thinking. Settle in mind's own state in a space that is neither the appearance-making or appearance that have ceased, nor the ones about to be established. In that which is neither what one is rid of, nor what one is about to accept, is Mahamudra. So that's the fourth tradition. And then the final, the fifth one, says in the text, our text, also many others state that no matter what type of discursive thoughts are generated, focus on them without making them vanish. In addition to that, by allowing them to become more extensive, they will become self-liberated. Thus their dawning and liberation will be simultaneous. However many thoughts there are that many enumerations of the Dharmakaya. Quoting here Lama Shan, who's again a great Tibetan master in the Mahamudra lineage. When resting in such a state and discursive thoughts suddenly occur, they are from the clear light Dharmakaya. Do not think that they are something else. Thus the proliferation of discursive thoughts is emptiness emanating from emptiness, Dharmakaya emanating from Dharmakaya, and unity emanating from unity. So here the fifth tradition, His Holiness says the following. The fifth and final tradition is, no matter what thought mind produces, to press on without trying to make it go away. Since stamped as a seal upon any thought is the guarantee that it automatically releases itself and disappears, its arising and releasing occur simultaneously. As many thoughts as arise are merely so many members of the ranks of Dharmakaya, a body of deep awareness encompassing everything. As Shang Yang Drupa has said, in the sphere of being absorbed like this, if mind all of a sudden gives rise to a thought, it is from clear light Dharmakaya. Do not think it is anything else. The emanation of thought is emptiness emanating from emptiness, Dharmakaya emanating from Dharmakaya, a unified pair emanating from a unified pair. So those are the five example, five old traditions. Well, these are just five examples. So these are just five examples. Oh, in the Shamatha? Yeah. I mean, so in the oral Mahamudra tradition, because it's oral, what you will find is that the instructions will be very precise from master. No, there's no correlation. No. And you'll have, remember the oral Mahamudra tradition came into Tibet from the great Indian master Tilopa Naropa, but also Maitripa also had a lineage into Tibet. And through these lineages, coming down through Marpa, Milarepa, and so forth, then down to Gampopa, then the Kagyu school was formed. And that's actually what's called the Drukpa Kagyu school. But also, Tilopa also had, a sister called Naguma. And she was also a great Indian yogini. And she also had a lineage of Mahamudra instructions that got transmitted into Tibet. And on the basis of her instructions, which are very similar to Tilopa, of course, we have now what's called the Shangpa Kagyu lineage, still existing today. One of the great, well-known modern-day masters, passed away some years ago, of course, Kalu Rinpoche. So Kalu Rinpoche is the Shangpa Kagyu tradition. Then from Gampopa, he had a number of disciples, and through these disciples, a number of lineages within the Kagyu system started. And often you'll hear that from Gampopa, we have the four primary traditions and the eight secondary traditions. So we already have 12 lineages coming at that time. And within those, one of his main disciples was Dusum Kempa, who's now known as the first Karmapa. So then the Karma Kagyu tradition started there. Then we have also from that time the Drukpa Kagyu, Drikung Kagyu, and so forth. And so there are a number of lineages from there. And then, of course, these various different oral instructions, the ones we saw in the Shamatha section, you know, looking at like a child in a temple and stuff, these are just, they're not different traditions. They were six different analogies that were commonly used in many of these different Mahamudra traditions. So those are not six different traditions, but rather six analogies that were commonly used in many of these traditions to help in the practice. Here, the Panchen Lama, what he's doing is he is selecting a number of different instructions, probably from different lineages within the Kagyu system. Maybe some of these instructions are coming from the same lineage, I'm not sure. But what he's doing, he's selecting a few of them as an example to show this is the way in which, in the Mahamudra tradition, disciples are introduced to the ultimate nature of the mind. And he's just giving a sample here. a 5. I mean, he could probably give a sample of 10, 20, 30, many. Because what he's going to do now in the next section we're going to do is, based on this sort of sampling, what we can see from this sample is that the type of instructions that we receive are very direct instructions that hopefully, you know, by looking to see if the mind is not in the body somewhere or not, if it has a particular shape or colour or something, you know, or is it coming from somewhere, is it remaining somewhere, is it going somewhere, with these sorts of instructions, hopefully then that will lead the disciple to realise emptiness, to realise that there is no independent mind. So what he's going to do is, based on these oral instructions now, he's going to give a very clear presentation based on Lama Tsongkhapa's approach on what is this ultimate nature of the mind all of these oral instructions are trying to get the disciple to come to realise. What is this emptiness? And that's what we're going to look at now in a very clear, precise way. So that's what we're leading into, basing on these oral instructions. Because these oral instructions don't really talk so much directly in that way. So these instructions often are experiential-based instructions. So often they are given by the master to the disciple in such a way that has some strong impact on the disciple. So that's why often in these oral traditions, like Mahamudra Dzogchen, then often for them to be effective, there needs to be a close connection between master-disciple. And the master really needs to be qualified, and the disciple needs to be sort of at a state ready to receive these instructions, and then they can have very strong impact. And often these sorts of instructions at the higher level are called these pointing out instructions. You know, here in the text, when it talks about introducing the ultimate nature of the mind, that is this pointing out, to point out the nature of the mind. But if the master is not, or themselves have not realized the nature of the mind, then these pointing out instructions are just intellectual words. And if this disciple is not at a level already, or quite a good level, then again, they're just going to be words that sound nice and poetic, but they're not going to have really any impact. But if it's a qualified master and the disciple has a certain level already and they have a strong connection, then these sorts of instructions can be very effective, very effective. Okay.
I have
yeah.
In the last text by Lama Fan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They are from the clear light and the high. So what would be the difference in? Because these are still thoughts.
So the clear light here is the word for the very subtle mind. So it's like clear light Dharmakaya. It doesn't mean a Dharmakaya that is somehow of some clear light. This is another word for Dharmakaya. So the clear light, comma, Dharmakaya.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what they're saying is that again, in these oral traditions of Mahamudra Dzogchen, even from the very beginning, they're really trying to come down to this very subtle mind. So, of course, all appearances are really coming from this very subtle mind. Well, any state, even for us now, we can say that all appearances are from the very subtle mind. But, of course, yeah. I mean, we've only got access now to the coarse mind. So then often when in the Mahamudra Dzogchen traditions in Kagyu Nyingma school, when they talk about appearances, they don't often talk about appearances from the coarse mind. They often talk about appearances from Dharmakaya, from clear light mind. Because that's the level that they're trying to come in at. Yes, so in the presentation we have here, Galuk Mahamudra, And in the Galuk system in general, in the Lam Rim, there's a very clear distinction between sutra level and tantra level. You know, in Lam Rim, it's all sutra level, and at the end of Lam Rim, they say, okay, now, if you're ready, go into tantra. Whereas in the Kagyu Nyingma school, Mahamudra Dzogchen, there's not that sort of clear distinction. So you find that already from the very beginning, the instructions have a very much tantric flavour because they don't really distinguish that. They make that distinction. From the very beginning, they are trying to operate at that very subtle level. For example, Buddha nature. You know, Buddha nature in the Galup system, if you're not talking tantra, is just the potential of our mind to achieve enlightenment, this mind. Buddha nature in Kagyu Nyingma is Dharmakaya, or is the very subtle mind. That's what it means for them, because they're trying to operate at that level from the beginning. So they don't have this sort of... Of course, then as we see actually in the Mahamudra and Dzogchen tradition, they do have the stages of practice. You know, they say, oh, you can't access Rigpa, you can't access the very subtle mind. Okay, you need to do some generation completion stage practice. You can't even do generation station completion stage well? Okay, you need to do some shamatha and vipassana practice. You can't even do that? Okay, you need to do some foundation practices. So all of those levels of practice are in both the Mahamudra and Dzogchen tradition. But from the very beginning, what you find is a lot of the instructions are already aimed at this very subtle mind. And of course, it sounds very attractive, you know, these sorts of instructions when you hear, just rest in a non-conceptual state, rest in Rigpa. And people go, oh, that's nice. Oh, yes, I'm resting in Rigpa. Oh, wonderful. And then, of course, they're just spacing out. No? Even worse, if they believe they're resting in Rigpa, then they become completely deluded. Because they think, you know, I'm in Rigpa, I'm in Dharmakaya, I'm enlightened. Everything I do is enlightened activity. And then they become completely unethical. Big mess. Okay, let's go on in the texts. So now we're going into section 2 of the Vipassana. And here, the Panchen Lama is going to now clearly, as the title says, presenting... having extracted the essence of those instructions. The essence of those oral instructions is that they are trying to lead the disciple to realize the ultimate nature of the mind, to realize emptiness. So he's now going to give a very clear presentation about what emptiness is and how we can really come to clearly understand and realize it based on Lama Tsongkhapa's teachings. So he starts with a quote from a sutra that says, due to not knowing the way in which things are empty, peaceful and unproduced, migrators wander. The teacher, again the Buddha, Buddha Shakyamuni, possessing compassion for them, calls them to enter by skillful methods and hundreds of reasonings. It says, due to not knowing the way in which things are empty, peaceful and unproduced. These are sort of code words. So, empty, peaceful, and unproduced means... And this is talking about a presentation often in Buddhism called the Three Doors of Liberation. Called the Three Doors of Liberation, emptiness, signlessness, wishlessness. So maybe a few of you who've studied at the Lam Rim may have come across this presentation. It pops up now and again in the Vipassana section of texts. And the three doors of liberation are talking about the same thing, emptiness, from three different, slightly different perspectives. Emptiness is talking about the nature of reality from the perspective of the entity of the thing itself. Meaning, everything is empty of independent existence. So that's the door of liberation of emptiness. But we can also look at things from the perspective of the cause. This is saying they're not inherently existent. But then we can look at, are they inherently produced or not? And to realize that they're not inherently produced is signlessness. There's no sign of inherently existent cause. So that's looking at emptiness from the perspective of the cause. There's no inherently existent cause to anything. But we can also look at nature reality from the perspective of the result. You know, does this thing inherently produce a result? And that's wishlessness. So wishlessness is looking at nature of reality from the perspective of the result. There's no inherently produced results. And so here, when he says that due to beings not knowing the way in which things are empty, is the first one. And the second one here is not knowing that they're peaceful. Peaceful is relating to this. And unproduced, third. So these words are saying that due to sentient beings not understanding that things do not inherently exist, they're not inherently caused, they do not produce any inherently existent results, i.e., through not realizing emptiness, then the teacher, the Buddha, out of compassion, helped them to move towards that realization by skillful methods and hundreds of reasonings. And so the Panchen Lama here is talking about that verse. He's commenting, he says, thus it is taught that due to not knowing the profound emptiness, the way in which things are selflessness, and here emptiness and selflessness mean the same thing. And I'm going to talk more about that shortly. But here, when we're talking emptiness, selflessness, same. In other schools, philosophical schools in Buddhism, they have a different meaning. Emptiness and selflessness do not mean the same thing. But here, they do. And we'll talk more about that shortly. Due to not knowing profound emptiness, migrators wander in samsara. The teacher, the Buddha, who possesses great compassion for those who wander in samsara, in order to liberate them from samsara, cause them to enter the path of realizing selflessness or emptiness directly and indirectly by skillful methods for realizing selflessness and hundreds of reasonings for determining selflessness. And then he's quoting, of course, Shantideva, a great Indian master from the 8th century. All these branches were taught by the subduer. So the subduer here is another epitaph for the Buddha, for the sake of wisdom. So what we can understand is that the Buddha, everything he taught was either directly leading us to realize emptiness or indirectly. So all the other teachings indirectly help us to move towards this realization of emptiness. Any questions? So here then, in terms of, maybe I'll finish on this point, lunchtime, is, or maybe we've got a handout. Not sure. Yes, we have. There's coarse and subtle selflessness handout. And we'll refer back to this a bit later when we go a little bit further in the text. But I just wanted to show the different philosophical schools. So you see here in the left column, there are four philosophical schools. Vaibhashika, Sautrantika, Chittamatra, Madhyamika. Here in this text, we're following, again, the instructions from Lama Tsongkhapa, the founder of the Gelug school of Tibetan Buddhism, and all the four schools of Tibetan Buddhism, as their basis, have the philosophical view of Madhyamika. So they're all following the Madhyamika system. And within that, we see that there are actually two sub-schools, Prasangika and Svatantrika. These are slightly different interpretations of this Madhyamika view, and we are following the Prasangika interpretation of emptiness. So that's what's going to be explained here in this part of the text, is when we're explaining emptiness, and remember, emptiness was taught by the Buddha in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, we are looking at those teachings from the Buddha from the perspective of the Prasangika philosophical system, that understanding of emptiness. Those Perfection of Wisdom teachings also were interpreted in a slightly different way, and then we have the Chittamatra philosophical system. So also in Chittamatra they talk about the idea of emptiness, but they have a different idea what that means. And then the Sautrantika Vaibhashika philosophical systems are coming from more the Four Noble Truths teachings. So in the Four Noble Truths teachings, we see that the fundamental ignorance that we need to overcome is this grasping to self. So we have to realize no self, realizing selflessness. So here, these two philosophical systems came out of those teachings. So in those teachings, there's no real teaching about emptiness. So in these schools, two lowest, you won't really see anything about emptiness. So that's a beginning. We're going to look at this a little bit more this afternoon. So just to remind you again, and then it's lunchtime, is that here these instructions we're getting from the Panchen Lama are coming from through Lama Tsongkhapa. He founded the Gelug school of Tibetan Buddhism. And in this explanation, we are explaining emptiness that the Buddha taught in the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra teachings from the understanding or perspective of the Prasangika Madhyamika philosophical system. So that's what we're looking at in the text. Anyone have any brief questions about the four schools? We'll touch on them again a couple of times this afternoon and tomorrow. We won't go into detail because these four philosophical schools, there's a lot in those schools. And if anyone's really interested in knowing more about these philosophical schools, I'm actually in June in London at the Jamyang Centre. I'm teaching these four philosophical schools over two long weekends. So anyone who has some interest in understanding these four philosophical schools in detail, that's the place to to go.
Just one.
Sorry? I think there's two. I think the first weekend is mid-June and then 20-something June. It's on my website. I'll give my website later, but it's 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, each weekend. The first weekend I'm doing the Vaibhashika Sautrantika school, and the second weekend I'm doing Chittamatra Madhyamika school, based on a text that talks about them in big lot of detail. So if you have some interest in that, then come along. Last question, then we break for lunch.
If someone means emptiness, right?
We're going to talk about this. That's coming. I don't want to go there yet. Okay, so let's break there and then come back at 2:00.